This is a production of Cornell University.
So we'll start as usual with roll call. We have from Arts and Humanities, Kristen, Andy,
yeah.
Becca,
yeah.
Life Sciences, Alexa, Kavya,
yeah.
Cinnamon,
yeah.
Physical Sciences and Engineering, Dutch,
yeah.
Jeremy,
yeah.
Derek,
yeah.
Nathan,
here.
Yeah. Professional schools, Alexei, not here, Elizabeth, Anna, James, acting today, Nick, social sciences, Margaret,
here,
Mo,
here,
Wendy,
here.
And then Kara from CPA,
here,
and Kate. Thank you. Okay, so we only have 1 minute to approve for today from September 24th of 2019. Is there any proposal for changes, amendments, or otherwise? Can I entertain a motion to pass the minutes as it is? A second. Is there any dissent? Okay. Seeing none. The minutes are passed as it is. And next we have our guest for today. And our first presentation is from Don CB and Tom Park. They'll be presenting on the two-step implementation for student center and student centers.
Hi everybody, my name is Tom Horton. I am the acting Chief Information Security Officer for the university. There it goes. With me is Don Seavey, the Director of the Director of IT for Student Services. First of all, I just want to thank you all for allowing us to come and present today. I know that talking about IT security isn't always the most riveting thing on the agenda, but I really appreciate the time to sort of let you know what's happening and what's going on and how it impacts you. So, any questions during the whole thing, feel free to raise your hand. This is more of a, a discussion rather than a show you some slides and you sit there and get PowerPoint to that. I don't want that. So, the agenda today, what is happening and when is it happening? Why are we implementing two-step in front of students? How does it impact you, and what else do you need to know? There'll be time for questions at the end, obviously, or whatever. So, what is happening and when is it happening? So, on November 26th of this year, both Student Essentials and Student Center will have an extra layer of protection after you log in. So, a quick show of hands, how many here are familiar with two-factor authentication or two-step authentication? Yeah, good number. That's great. Thank you. So, and how many use Cornell's implementation of two-factor, two-step? Also, so for those of you that are familiar with Cornell's version of two-step, that's exactly what is going in front of Student Center and Student Essentials. That will, like I said, happen on November 26th. Incidentally, that date was selected as part of the working group to make this happen. Part of that group is the University Registrar of Cassie Demosky, and Cassie thought this would be a good date to implement because it's right around, it's right after drop ads and before March. So there shouldn't be any mandatory transactions that you all need to make in Student Center or Student Central at this time. So what is it? For those of you that don't know, two-step logging is Cornell's branded version of two-factor authentication. Something you know, which is a password, and something you have, which is your phone or another device. I'll get into that in a second. A website is up there for you all to go check out with more information there. You can get support at that site. So when you go to Student Center or Student Central, you type in your ID and you type in your password right now, unless you've opted in to using two-factor everywhere, which if you've done that, I have extra applause for you. But right now, if you have not made it or opted yourself into that, you don't see an extra step that you have to take. After November 26th, you will see this page, which gives you options for how you would like to authenticate with your second factor. Most of you will be using a smart device, and there are a couple other options which I can go into in a bit. But it just sends a little push to an app that's installed on your phone. It's free. It's a green checkbox. Yes, that's me logging in. Or red square. Nope, that wasn't me logging in. Somebody is trying to use my. That's what it looks like. Any questions? You pause for a second. Yeah.
And then mentioned will we be required to do two-factor authentication every time you log in, or this is one time you log in?
So you can do, and I can show you this later too. But at the bottom, there's a remember me for 24 hours checkbox. So you can do, as long as you're logging in from the same browser in the same session, so you didn't close your browser and end the process and then open it back up again, you won't be asked to redo your secondary authentication. But if you're in Chrome, you just keep it open and you're working along, and you go back in there, it won't ask you to do that.
Okay. Sorry. I know that currently Cornell's offline two-factor option requires a proprietary application to be installed with them. Do you have any plans to implement an open one-time password algorithm instead of just mystery duo ones that Google Authenticator or other authenticator apps could use?
Yes, so that's a good question. So right now there's no plans for that. But we do have the ability to download six SMS codes, so six one-time use codes that you can use. And there also is a token available at the store. Later slide, spoiler alert. That for $25 you can get a token that reads off a six-digit code as well that you can use. So no lines yet.
Can existing UDP tokens be added as two factor?
If it supports U2F, it can.
Okay.
For sure. Question?
Yeah. So I've opted into two factor authentication. I certainly get a lot of
Okay.
We start having problems.
Right on the other slide, there's a support link, and I can give you that now, but it's the service desk, the main IT service desk. If you start seeing those errors, which I have not heard of, so I'm not aware, but if you do see those errors, that's definitely not something that we want. So if you see them, we need to know about it, so we can accept it.
Okay, so not so much for graduate students, but for undergrad students, what course enroll is a really strong process. Because Student Center is often impossible to log into. How is this going to complicate?
So, it's a good question. This is an extra step, and I don't know why that site in particular, I assume it's usage, right? It's getting hammered, so I assume that's why it's hard to get at. So, Duo is one of the industry leaders, and I would imagine that if there is high usage at the time, that it should be able to handle it. But again, we've been using it for years on campus, and it's seen it spikes in usage, and we haven't seen it suffer from using it.
It's still going to add this step.
Unless, of course, you log in earlier, do the remember me for 24 hours, and then it won't. So if you're trying to prepare, that might be a good step.
So if you have general questions about this topic, I ask that you wait until we finish
the presentation.
If you have clarification about the present, PowerPoint, then please raise your hand at that. Thank you.
All right, so why are we doing this? So we are protecting your data from unauthorized access.
For those of you that don't know, inside of Student Center, you can see your financial data, you can see your social security number. So those things are all bad to get into the wrong hands, really, really bad. And so in order to protect that, we want to add this layer of security. One factor is not enough anymore to protect it. And why do we say that? Well, in the last fiscal year, we measure total password compromises. In the last fiscal year, students made up about 35% of our total password compromises. We don't necessarily break that down between graduate and undergraduate, but it's all kind of lumped into one. So about 35% of our total password compromises are students. So it's still a large problem. A majority of that comes in through phishing. Phishing emails, we still see a lot of phishing emails. We're working hard on removing those, but the adversaries are tricky. And so you know, we are reactionary. How does this impact you? Well, for starters, the good is that it's much harder for your data to fall in the wrong hands. So, you know, unless somebody gets a hold of your password and also is able to, access your device, it's much harder for somebody to use stolen or harvested credentials for bad. It's better protected against phishing, which we do see a large number of, and it only takes a few seconds when the app pushes to say that. And then what I like to call not necessarily the bad, but the mildly annoying, is that you do need to remember your phone or your hardware token wherever you go, and then there is one additional step in order to get to what you need. That is mildly annoying, I do understand, but we feel like the risk here in not acting outweighs that sort of level of annoyance. So that's why we're doing what we're doing. What else do you need to know? This is where I circled the remember for 24 hours checkbox. If you do, if you do want to use that, that's totally fine. That's why it's there. Feel free. So now you can use a U2F token. Don, I think I've got one of those on the on my computer there. It's very small, but it's a USB token. This particular token is officially from Yubico, and it goes in the USB slot, and then there's a little golden button on there. And it only works in Chrome browsers, so you can't use it for, like, if you use Firefox, you can't use it to do Safari. But if you use Microsoft Chrome, and you don't want to have to pull your phone out of your pocket and tap the button on the app, this device will allow you to just use the little button on here the same way you would on your app. So you can set up both things. So quick little timeout aside here. One thing I do recommend is that you set up more than one device in your two-step profile. If you get stuck and you lose your landline, if you have one of these, or you have a phone that is in your, I don't know, nobody has a landline anymore, but, pretend for a moment.
Batteries are done in your cell phone.
Right? Yeah, but you might have a tablet and you might have a phone. You can set up your tablet as that secondary emergency device. You've got an iPad or a Pixel Sleep. You can definitely set that up as your secondary device. So this is a U2F token. You can get these online. They don't carry these in the store. I got there's another one in my laptop that you can use as a flashlight. It's so bright, the light on it is ridiculous a little bit, but that was cheaper, and it's a little push button thing. And it doesn't come out as much. It sticks out a little bit, and I'm nervous that I'll break it because it doesn't feel very strong. So, but they are between $9 and $20 on places like Amazon or wherever you get your electronic stuff. The hardware token is very similar in size. It's a little thicker. And it has like an LED display on it, and it displays a six-digit code. And that six-digit code is what you would use either in addition to or in place of your smartphone app. It's $25 to register at your two-step.net ID.com site. And you can use that instead of a phone app. You can use it, you put it on a keychain, and if sometimes you forget your phone, but you always have that little device around, it's super easy to just be like, oh crap, I can't believe it's in my phone, but I have this thing so I can still log in. Those are available at the store for $25. That is our cost as well. We don't, that's, there's zero markup on that. That you can use with any browser. It's not limited to just Chrome. Those are kind of neat though. And at $25, it's a nice, like, it's a nice thing to have just in case. So there's that. This is the last slide. So what to do and where to go if you need help. So our website, twostep.nerdy.cornell.edu, is the place where not only you go to sign up and register your devices, but there are also links there to get support. There is a link to, obviously, the IT service desk is it.cornell.edu/support. You go there, they've got a phone number on there, they've got, you know, they've got an email address I included here, and a phone number. One thing I might recommend is before the November 26th deadline is if you haven't already opted in to using Cornell's two-factor authentication everywhere, including Student Center and Student Essentials, you go do that because that kind of gives you an idea of what it will be like to have to do use two-factor for Student Center and Student Essentials. You know, if you get stuck between now and November 26th after you've opted in, you can always opt back out. But it does give you an idea of kind of what to expect in the real experience of it. So, as opposed to listening to me drone on about so that's the end of my slideshow. But if anyone has any like questions in general, I'd like to.
We have Matt and
Emma. So first off, thank you very much. My question is, you've already opted in the two-factor authentication everywhere that I did a couple years ago. Are there any changes that will occur as November 26th, or is it just continuing on as well?
It will just continue on as well.
Yep.
I just want to check that my understanding is correct, and that what's going to be required after November 26th is just the Student Center and the Student Essentials websites. And if you opt in, that is everywhere they use your mobile ID?
Correct.
Are there any plans, or could there possibly be any plans in the future to make it required for everything?
It's a good question. If I had my way, I think I would do that. But we're being very careful about what we mandate and what we are leaving open. So the reason that we decided to go that route this time is because, you know, once we've got Student Center and Student Essentials protected by two-factor, that really does, there really isn't another system that contains that kind of highly confidential data that is not behind two-factor authentication. So I love that in an ideal world, yes, but I think at this point we found that sort of happy medium.
The other thing I'll mention on that as well is the administrative units on campus have actually done exactly that. We've said we're going to have all of our staff do a required in, and we need the staff to do that.
And Faculty Center went behind two-factor in June. So that was first, and then now it's going to be second. Thank you.
Oh, yeah, that's all right. Thank you.
So just kind of a technical question, but why are we using two-factor authentication on phones instead of, say, on Cornell and NCL? Is there a particular reason that we are using?
I didn't catch that last part, I'm sorry.
Okay. Is there a reason that we're using two-factor authentication specifically with hardware as opposed to just software through email verification or something of this nature?
Well, email verification, it's not really a second factor with email. You can do it by SMS, but that does not adhere to the, it's called NIST 800-171, the National Institute for Standards Technologies. They really are shying away from using SMS for multi-factor. And we kind of use what Duo offers, right? Because we've outsourced our two-factor program to Duo. We bought their product, and so if they don't really offer that, then we don't really use it.
And I just wanted to make more of a comment. So I'm with that student, and we only register for classes maybe once or twice a year, depending on your year. And a lot of students find it really difficult to use the Student Center website to begin with. And I can see that authentication further complicating things. And maybe there's going to be
And there is a working group of holders in all these topics. That includes the relevant office, you can imagine, from transportation and housing. And so there are staff around the university who are chairing or serving in the committee, and then we ask graduate students to serve with us. And I guess for the last document, we do that sometimes, 8 times a year, in working groups to examine in detail each action item. And our process was to say, what can we do immediately? What can we do in the more shorter term? And then what is really aspirational? Like, pardon?
Hiring staff.
Well, just, you know, hiring new staff takes identification of funds, and then approval for a new position, and then the search for the new position.
So, yeah, it actually like those, I would say, like, that's not many that the Cornell GPA is, I don't think it's very low mark here. Probably at the other high, having on the other part. Ask, I really go up with the information they had in the and then even our like my hourly years. We all are in lots of times undergraduate right now, and we're all looking forward. So it's been like an amazing day for me, for us, and for the
anybody here who served on one of the working groups in any one of the 3 years?
Can you remind us like what our timeline is for like these
groups.
Oh, yeah. So this will become more relevant with if you join an actual area. But we're looking at hopefully contacting relevant administration and hoping more community fora by the end of the semester. And then next semester will be more of the actual writing of the document.
If I want to look up like what areas of focus there are, who to contact, all what the UTS CI about, where should I go?
Oh yeah, so I will probably send an email out to the listserv so that everyone can get into contact with the relevant area. Any other questions? Okay. Thank you so much. So next we have division breakout, and this is your assigned areas. Yes.
Hey, quick note: last minute change. Physical science will actually be just outside.
Okay. Physical science is outside, and the rest let's follow this schema.
Thank you.
Okay.
We'll update it next time.
Okay. Thank you.
Thank you. I Oh, okay. I think it's correct.
That's not.
I get it. It also could be a little bit though that the law school historically is very brilliant.
So if you have specific questions or you want to clarify something with the committee chair, this is your time to do so. So we're trying it out to see if that works well. Yeah. Yes, Emmy? Can you speak up?
Sure. I know Josh wanted to pass these out. Did everyone get flying, small flying? Yeah, that was information about like any organization flying to an event. I didn't see you guys on day. You can reach out to me and I'll look at that.
Yeah. So additional co-sponsorship funding from the programming board. Any other, anything else you have questions on? Okay, they're also available to answer questions through email, so please email them if you have any questions. Next we have open forum, and several people have told me that they would like to say something during open forum, so I put it up. But anyone else is feel free to say whatever, you know, if this is your time to comment or make announcements. Yes,
Anisha. Hi, if you're recognizing Anisha, I am the graduate program student elected trustee. I'm trying to get in contact with more students who are living at Maplewood or who are in affected buildings of students who aren't able to move to Maplewood. So if anyone in the room is actually living in Maplewood right now, if you would be willing to talk to me after the meeting, I'd really appreciate it. And if any of you guys know people who are living in Maplewood in your department, the graduate field, program, etc., that would be willing to talk to me or would like to talk to me about their experience with Maplewood, please feel free to pass along my contact info. MAM737@cornell.edu, or just come talk to me after the meeting in the chat form.
So Jin, did you have something to say to that or something else? Okay, so I have a few other hands. I'll have you in my speakers list. Yes. So I have Kara and then Eugene and then Mo. Did you want to say something to that or something else? Okay.
Oh, my contact info is MAM737@cornell.edu.
I wanted to say something to your response.
Okay.
So what exactly is the purpose of why you're coming together?
Oh, so the Board of Trustees meeting is going to be at the end of this month, and I would like to be able to either put people who have spoken at Maplewood in contact with board members who might want to hear what their experience is like, or at least be able to just have a more robust understanding of that student experience by talking to more students, so that even if they're not there, I can really speak to that, because I'm sure people are going to ask about it.
Okay, so I had Kara. Caitlin, sorry. No,
wait.
So, I had you first, and then I had you.
Oh, okay. I know. I was going to ask if I could do that.
Oh, it was an answer? Okay. Yeah. Cool. Okay, so, Kara.
Okay. So, for those of you who haven't heard, I have a CEO at SPU. A 27-year-old CEO grad was recently illegally detained in Nicaragua, and I just thought that the graduate community should know she's a human rights activist. And we don't have anything in particular that anyone can do necessarily besides spread the word at this point. SUPA has issued their statement regarding this matter, and just please stay informed about it and support the Cornell graduate.
Okay. Anything to add to that or questions, Dietrich?
Sorry, I missed the very start of it. Did you say that this person was a Cornell grad student or alumni?
She graduated two.
Okay.
Yes,
where can we find the statement if you would like to share it on the social media accounts, etc.?
I found it on Facebook. Okay.
Oh.
I can also send it to people if they don't have access to Facebook. My ID is CJP258.
CJP258.
Eight, that's it.
Anything else on that issue? Yes.
If you Google CPR for non grad, you can their website and the statement comes up on their website.
Okay. Any other questions or comments on that? If not, I have Eugene.
Yeah, so I'm a slacker. I didn't submit this update this week. But I have three important events to announce. So the first being October 23rd from noon to 1. This will be hosting a community conversation on sexual assault. Probably might be able to remind me where that is in Alpha Room.
That
side is G22, so that's the 23rd from noon to 1, funds will be provided. We will also be co-hosting town hall with Zach. I probably did get reported to Brianna's better than I am. That's on the 26th at 1:15. I also don't know where to schedule the room for. And then, also importantly, on November 13th at 4:30 and 6:30, we're having a What's Your Story dinner with E. Newt. And this is actually a flipped What's Your Story, so graduate professionals will be able to tell their story to E. Newt and have her hear about their pathways to coming to Cornell. And that'll be a good event, I believe. There is no room yet determined for that, so I will update you on the location.
Wait for RSVP as soon as that information is available. Okay. I had Andy and then Max. Did you say that we need to RSVP for What's Your Story? Is
there
like a
sign-up sheet? There will be an RSVP for that event, especially because we'll be sending out sort of, not guidelines, but like structure for how that process of people telling their stories is going to go. So yeah, there should be more information about that within the next week or so.
Okay.
Matt?
I just wanted to ask if you could send some of the information to the listserv for, so we have it in our student athlete calendars and also so people who are up here can see it.
Mm-hmm.
Sure. Thank
you. Send it to Andy and then he'll be able to circulate it in writing so that people have it in record. Thank you. Any questions for Eugene? Did anyone else raise their hand? Sorry. So Doc Hardy said that he had the co-sponsorship form. So if you haven't done so, please take that form and give it to your field org or clubs. That might be very useful. And from IB Plus, they're still looking for buddies.
Yeah, so I think Nate and I talked about it before, but we're helping to organize the IB Plus Summit that is going to be happening the last weekend of October here at Cornell. We are looking for Cornell students to essentially serve as like buddies or points of contact for delegations from different schools. So if they need help finding out where their car or they get lost at some point, they have somebody they can reach out to. We're still looking, I think, for 5 buddies. So if you're interested in doing this, you will get to attend all of the events, and there's going to be lots of fun creative stuff and good talks, and it's a really, really cool opportunity to talk to you graduate engineers at other institutions. So if you're interested at all, contact the internet.
Manisha's email, MAN737. Josh, yeah?
Oh, no, you do not have to be a voting member. We were sending voting members to know that people would set stuff up, but I mean, people have conflicts and stuff, so it doesn't have to be voting. So I'm getting a lot of good questions for this.
So, Andy, can we resend this email to the info listserv? Okay. Okay. Good. Any other questions on that? Okay, Kavya?
Are you okay with people sending it further than the GPSA listserv? Is there any concern?
Yes.
I think we would prefer GPSA, since it is.
Yeah, so as you get more, it depends on as the people come in, so we'll prioritize first interested voting members, interested students, field reps, and then people outside of GPSA. This is also a good opportunity if you're kind of like this in the back or on the sidelines, like, I'm not sure, I kind of need to get this stuff, but I'm not sure how to feel about being in a leadership position in the future, or I kind of want to explore the topics or something. This is a really good opportunity to kind of like take a day and a half and get another couple of things and just be exposed to kind of what's going on both here at Cornell and at other institutions. And you'll have some base time with our current GPSA deck, and maybe spark some interest or help you feel more comfortable with that set up for a leadership position.
It's also really interesting. Like, it's super eye-opening to see what happens with other schools and how they interact with not only the graduate professional community, but their administrators, and how they structure their organization. It's
But it's one of the things that helps spark my interest in like being more in the GSA program.
There's also free food.
Yes,
we're good
for food.
Yeah,
free
food.
Okay. So everyone will be getting, yes, Eugene.
When will people that already volunteer get more information about all these benefits?
Yeah, I'll talk to you after the meeting.
We were on the board this week, so we'll after we have full set or representative, we will have a meeting with the planning team and all the ones to talk about the federal and stuff. We just don't have a full set yet.
Okay, so I have Andy.
Can you just remind us of the dates?
October 26th through 28th. We do recognize you might have conflict as that's coming up. So if you do have a conflict and your work may not be able to be there for the whole time, just come talk to me and I will try and figure something out.
The evening on the 26th through the morning.
You don't have to sleep with it that whole time. So like that week. You can be contactable.
Do you think it's next?
Will it essentially be that entire time line goes, like, we'll have things to do, or, like, how much responsibility is there, I suppose? It's going to be, like, low tempo, but you'll need to be available. There will be periods of time, like, around major transitions in, like, the schedule, and so I'll share the schedule with the folks who are engaged interested, you don't want to commit. And there's times, like, major transitions when we're trying to move everyone from one place to another place. Where we're definitely there for everyone doing stuff, and then there'll be some definite downtime during the day Saturday where, like, if you have other work you want to do, you can work on, and you just need to be, like, within reach if we need to go out of contract.
So the most critical time that you would have to be available is that Friday, the 26th afternoon, because that is when people will be coming into Ithaca, and they will need help finding the hotel, parking, how to get to the barn, like, things like that. They will need help just moving bodies around. But I think he said, like, after 8 p.m. both, or on Saturday, if you want to, like, physically leave and be on the wall, that's fine. Any other questions? So just a little something from me. And I've been attending the Student Health Benefit Advisory Committee, and they have an initial recommendation that is not official yet, so it's like something that they've thrown around. And currently, they propose no change to insurance waiver requirements, so there's no change in that one. But the big one I think that will interest a lot of people is there is a proposal to increase the student health fee by 10% for the next year. Not continuously, I just wanted to share this with you. Yes, Matt.
So I have to say, I'm very much concerned that the proposal of a 10% increase. I mean, those who weren't here, the health fee was introduced in the 2014-15 academic year. I was fortunate to be in some of the early discussions. And at the time, it was billed as a, we need to really ensure health is a line item, so we're going to separate it out, we're going to increase the cost, everyone will have access, but we don't anticipate raising it year over year. It wasn't meant to be something that's raised frequently. I mean, it was introduced at $350, it went to $370, and a 10% increase would take it to $407. So that's $57 in a couple of years. But if that's in isolation, I wouldn't be so concerned, because tuition goes up 3-4% year over year, you get professional students are paying $60,000 plus in tuition, and I'm just concerned that it seems like, as this thing was sold, and right now it came in, as a matter of fact, people tried to show what it seemed to be about it. I mean, when it came in, it was really billed as a, this is a really, it's an important thing, and a model that wasn't something they planned on raising year over year, and all of a sudden, a 10% jump, I mean, you say it says it's a one-time jump, but the fee was supposed to be a fee that wasn't supposed to be changing all the time. So I'm very concerned that it seems like the goalposts are moving, and that this is just another way to constantly increase the current fees. And I personally find that concerning, considering the way we can reduce, and the fact that, well, I'm very glad this true input is being done relatively, I mean, had you not informed the Assembly, I don't think a lot of people would have known about this. So I really appreciate this, but I find it very concerning that this is really being used as a quick way to keep raising money. When the administration says they're throwing money at mental health and more health money, why is it coming out of students so much when really,
I understand the question, but this is very important to me.
So I can, if you're interested, I would be, you know, I can share a little bit more details with you. But I think Andy and I, we've been talking about actually inviting them to come in, where you can give them, like, you know, more feedback. But this is just to let you know that this, you know, I just heard this last week too. So this is like something that's new, and you know, they haven't decided on it. It's just something they're proposing at the currently. So definitely, they're willing to come in and meet, you know, student groups too. So we are trying to fit them in into the, you know, schedule in the next few weeks.
I have a question.
Oh, on this. Okay.
Is this different than student health insurance?
It's different from student health insurance. Yeah.
Thank you. Yeah.
We haven't talked about that yet. So if you are enrolled in Cornell's health SHIP insurance, then you don't pay the health fee, because a part of that insurance is already paying for the Cornell Health Center services there, and the health fee is paying for services there for students who don't have Cornell Health insurance. Just to make it clear. I had Nate first, and then Andy, and then I can go back.
No question. So there's a 10% healthy one time. Do you mean it's going to increase 10% one time and everybody trusts it? Or if you're only for 1 year, that's going to be unsolved and then they come back then?
No, it will not come back then. But after the 10% increase, it will increase at a rate that is like inflation rate.
Okay.
Not like, yeah.
And the statistics for the healthy, is that something like 90% of graduate students don't pay?
That is probably true, but like it's the professional schools have a very different, you know. Andy?
You've already mentioned it. We've been in discussion and getting them here to talk about this, and that should be separate from like mental health and well-being. This is not specifically about what's going on with this. Just so to keep that.
I think it's excellent to have them talk. I think it's something that needs to be publicly discussed. And I just, in terms of the student health insurance versus the reason there's health fee is because Cornell Health decided they don't want to work with private insurance, even the nation's largest insurers. I mean, in essence, I am young enough, and I think a lot of, especially law students are like this, young enough to still pay their parents' insurance. So in essence, my family is still paying for health insurance. Cornell has decided we don't want to deal with my insurance, we're just going to charge the fee. And I find that essence, so this is baked into SHIP, but this fee is also because Cornell doesn't want to pay anyone's insurance, which I also find, I had discussions within that later for health at the time, but that's neither here nor there. And when you say increasing by inflation, are you referencing increasing by the rate of inflation, which in essence has been next to nothing over the past decade in this country, or do you mean health inflation, which is ridiculously high?
So, again, like, they will be able to explain this better, but the numbers that was presented to me was 10% one time for this year, and then after that, it's like they're projecting 3 to 4% every year. Like the rate of tuition increase, kind of, like, more or less.
Okay.
Yeah.
Is it right if we continue this conversation at another time, preferably when the person is actually in the room?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes. Okay. Just any last, you know, other announcement, comments? Okay. Okay. Is there any objection to adjourning the meeting? Okay. Seeing none. The meeting is adjourned.
This has been a production of Cornell University. On the web at cornell.edu.